Beruchim Abayim, ladies. We're studying Parashat Bechukotai, which is the last Parashah in the book of Vayikra. Much was said regarding the first Pasuk of our Parashah. The Pasuk writes, Im Bechukotai Telechu, which means if you will follow my decrees, my laws, then Borei Olam promises the greatest blessings, the blessings that we all wish. It says Borei Olam will provide us with rains in their proper time, when people are not in the street. The Gemara says it'll rain on Friday nights when everybody's home, so nobody's inconvenienced. There's going to be beracha in the produce, the economy is going to be strong, there's going to be food, there's not going to be any wars, there's going to be peace. Chas v'shalom, there's not going to be any wild animals that are damaging, there's not going to be any tragedies. 5 soldiers are going to chase 100 of our enemies and kill them all. And 100 of our soldiers will chase 10,000 of them and be victorious. God will dwell amongst us. He will love us. He will choose us as a nation. All this comes true if we fulfill the first few words, the 3 words of the Parashah, Im Bechukotai Telechu. So I think it's worth it for a minute to explain what does it mean, Im Bechukotai Telechu, to the fullest sense of the meaning here, because once we figure out what Im Bechukotai Telechu is, and we do it, then we're destined for all these berachot. There's a famous Rashi over here. Rashi says Im Bechukotai Telechu is not referring to observance of the mitzvot. That's for sure. That's written the next line, V'et mitzvotai tishmeru. But Im Bechukotai Telechu, he says, is specifically talking about studying Torah. But not only studying Torah, but devoting our lives to the study of Torah. And studying it, as Rashi says, ba'amelut. Ba'amelut means with toil, with sacrifice. Studying it maybe means by getting up a little earlier from stealing from our sleep. Or maybe staying a little later at night and robbing some sleep from our eyes. Or maybe missing a lunch, or maybe coming late for dinner in order to hear a Devrei Torah or to study. And actually during the study itself, it shouldn't be studied in a relaxing manner. Sitting with the Gemara, lying at in the pool or something like that. Torah should be studied with concentration, with great intent, with great seriousness of the subject. And when one is able to study Torah with that level of intensity, the Torah guarantees us all the berachot. Now, as ladies, your obligation in the study of Torah is not as strict as a man's obligation. That's clear. Although we must point out that a lady must be fluent in all the laws of Shabbat, and in all the laws of Kashrut, and in the laws of Mikveh. In those cases, she probably has to be a bigger expert than the men. Because after all, it's the ladies that are running the Jewish home. It's the lady that's running the kosher kitchen. She has to be fluent in all the laws of Kashrut more than the man. The man relies on the lady. When it comes to the laws of Shabbat also, cooking, not cooking, doing, the lady usually, that's her field, certainly mikveh. So when we say ladies are not obligated to learn, it means they're not obligated to sit and open a Gemara and just read. Men are obligated. Every free moment of the day, they have to study everything and anything. Ladies only have to study what's practical for them, and musar and things like this. But even coming to a class, ladies, in the middle of the day, to stop, to find parking, to come out, to make an effort, this is your form of toil. This is your form of studying Torah, not under the easiest of circumstances. You're making an effort. And that effort that God sees, that makes all the difference in the world. The Gemara says you can't compare 2 students that are learning. One student studied 100 pages of Gemara. but it went easy for him. He's a smart kid. He went quickly. He read it. He understood it. And there's one guy who's a little hard to understand things. It took him the same time, but he's only to read one page. The Gemara says, who's more valuable? He says, the one that exerted himself on the one page is greater than the 100. So you see, Torah is measured not by pounds. It's not measured by quantity. It's not measured how many books did you finish? How many Gemariot did you do? Did you finish the whole Torah? That's not the barometer of success in Torah. Success in Torah is measured by amelut. Amelut is the effort. You know, it's possible, ladies, that in yeshivas, we could spend 10 hours, and I'm not exaggerating, 10 hours from the morning until the late afternoon, trying to understand one paragraph of a commentary. While others might say, well, let's just learn it, let's skip it, let's go further. But those that understand that God's reward is in the quality level of how you study, applying yourself and concentrating. But if we analyze the words, it says, "Im bechukotai telechu," which literally means, if you follow my laws and go, telechu. We have a good custom in our community that when our boys, and sometimes even girls, reach a certain age after they graduate, we have the understanding of what it means to send them to study for a year or two in the yeshiva. Specifically, to send them abroad to Eretz Yisrael. Our community has a great love for Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, "En Torah ke Torat Eretz Yisrael." There is no Torah in the world like the Torah that's studied in Eretz Yisrael. It's a different level. It's like that's where the books were written. That's where the Hachamim find themselves. The air in Israel is breathing. It just brings wisdom. All the scholars that we quote were raised and brought and studied in Israel, and therefore our community understands that vitality, that importance of having our kids go. And that's what the pasuk says: "Im bechukotai." If you want to be successful in Torah, telechu. Telechu means you have to go. One cannot become great in Torah locally. Not because we don't have Talmidei Hachamim in Brooklyn. Don't get me wrong. On the contrary, we have a lot of Talmidei Hachamim. But there's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of things over here that a boy that wants to advance himself in learning can get caught up in. There's things, there's family functions, there's places to go, there's social pressures, there's etc. It's like Lehavdil, and I'm giving a bad example. Those that go away to college, to medical school, they have to go away. They have to be away for a little while to sit and concentrate in order, although on the college campuses, they keep them busy enough with all the other shtuyot of the world. But we're talking about going to a yeshiva away, the advantages are unparalleled. Whether it's in Israel or away from the actual community for a while, there is something to be said about it. Im bechukotai telechu. But there's another explanation. That those that study Torah cannot be studied only in the Bet Midrash. Torah must be studied wherever you go. Baruch Hashem, today with the advancement of tapes and CDs, Baruch Hashem, you no longer have to limit your Torah studies to a class or where there's a rabbi live giving interpretations. Today you're able to take a tape, you're able to pop it in the machine, and as you're driving, as you're going, you're able to advance your knowledge. There are men today that are able to listen to 3 or 4 hours of the Dvar Torah without going into shul. Between driving to work and coming back from work in the car, especially in the summer if they're traveling from Deal, they're able to catch 4 or 5 hours. A few years back, some bright and intelligent young men in the community understood this importance of taking advantage of traveling time. And they started a project, which is a holy project, from the holiest projects in our community, which they call it as a Torah bus, where they rented a luxury bus, and they brought Hachamim, And they travel with class, there's no question. They sit comfortably and there's breakfast. They're not minimizing any of the ulama zeh on this bus. Don't think they're suffering on the bus. The bus is the top state-of-the-art bus. But at the same time, instead of spending 2 hours playing poker or gin rummy or watching a movie or sleeping away the time, they brought hachamim to sit and teach them for 2 hours going and 2 hours coming back. And these are businessmen. And they get off the bus, they're going to make money, and they're going to make a lot of money. They're not rabbis, by no means. But they sit for 4 hours a day studying Torah. On these people, I say they're fulfilling this pasuk also. Im bechukotai telechu. That you have to study the Torah, not only when you're sitting, not only when you're in the Beit Midrash, not only when you're stationary. Telechu. Even as you're traveling, even as you're walking, even as you're going, whether you're in your car listening to a tape, There's no excuse today. Baruch Hashem, the rabbis always tell us, whenever the Yetzer Hara comes up with new schemes in order to lure us into his trap, so the Torah has to also come up with similar schemes in order to compete. Today, wherever we go, there's Yetzer Hara on the road. Even the radio, which used to be I'm not going to say 100% kosher, but used to be a more a pure means of entertainment and a pure means of listening and so on. Today, unfortunately, even the radio has become a place, a source of filth, where certainly our children have to be monitored what they listen on the radio. In the olden days, we had the radio, I could listen to the radio all day long, any channel, any time, it doesn't matter, it's all kosher. Unfortunately, today, even that venue has become perverted. And therefore, Borei Olam had to make something to compete against that. In your car, you have an excuse to have a CD, put a tape on, listen to something else. You're not forced to be entertained by by these type of people. In bihokotai, telechu. You just have to do it as you're going. The Torah then tells us that as a result of studying Torah, God is going to bring peace. V'natati shalom ba'aretz. Why is that the result? Why, when people study Torah, why is the consequence peace? I think maybe those that study Torah, and I talk for myself, and I'm sure for others, Torah gives us a different perspective on life. Torah gives us a different focus. We have different priorities. When we come out of a class, other things in life don't mean as much. Already we're tilted, we have a slant now towards other things. The way we view worldly things and material possessions and honor and prestige, we become more eternal. We be looking for, you know, the long run, not for the short run. We don't take this world as serious with all the other things that other people expend their days with. Torah has that type of attitude that it implants in its listeners, in its studiers. And therefore, a natural consequence of people are going to study, you're not going to be bothered by things that other people are bothered. While other people are going to be bothered, oh, he said this to me, and my kavod, and I wasn't invited. You're learning Torah, who cares, they didn't invite you, and he said it, big deal. You're involved in money. It's like a person, if I could give an example, a person's in a store. And there's people in the store, and he's making money, and they're throwing $100 bills at him, and he's there, and he's... or better, he's in the king's treasury, and he's picking up $100 bills off the floor. He has 10 minutes in the king's treasury to take as many bills as he wants, and he's grabbing, and somebody comes to him as he's in there and tells him, you're a jerk, you're a fool. Does he even listen to him? Does he even hear what he's saying? Does he get offended? Let him say whatever he wants to me. I'm so happy what I'm doing. All the other things in life, don't bother you so much. As he's collecting the money, they come to him. Did you hear what she said about you? Look what I'm doing. I'm sitting in the lap of luxury. I'm going to Eden. I'm going to let such a petty, trivial thing now bother me. But people that are bored, and the people that have time on their hands, the people that their minds are looking for something to occupy them with, so these things become important. She said, he said, we went, and they're getting involved in all sorts of politics and all sorts of other things. And hence, machlokes. But those that study Torah, it's natural that they're going to be peaceful. They forgive people easily. Forget about it. Don't worry about it. It's not important. They're involved in, you know, Chas v'Shalom. It's the opposite would be true, God forbid, if somebody was preoccupied with a tragedy.
So that's the only thing that's on his mind. He doesn't care about everything else. Everything else becomes, you know, silly. God forbid a person's child is not well. So does he care about somebody said something or, you know, a remark was made? It pales in comparison to the problems that he has. So that doesn't pay attention. On the positive side, when you're learning Torah, the enjoyment is so great and the satisfaction is so great and the level of hana'ah is so awesome. Everything else in the world, big deal. So what, that bothers you? V'natati shalom ba'aretz. It'll bring peace. There's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says that when one finishes the Amidah, the last line that we say in the Amidah is Oseh Shalom Bemromav, God that makes peace. The law says that you have to bow and take 3 steps back. And then you have to turn to the left and you say Oseh Shalom Bemromav. And then you turn to the right and you say, Hu berachamav yaseh shalom aleinu. And then you turn to the center and you say, Va'al kol amo Yisrael. And then you stand straight and you say, Ve'imru amen. That's the proper way you're supposed to make oseh shalom. 3 steps back, the left, the right, and the center. I once heard a nice explanation on this Gemara. The Gemara is not only giving you a procedure. The Gemara is giving you advice how to make peace. The problem with people, when you're trying to make peace between them, is they don't want to move. They don't want to move from their position. They want to stand on their rights, and they're stubborn, and they don't want to concede. They don't want to compromise for the peace. So the Torah tells us, the first thing you have to do before you make Oseh Shalom, you have to take 3 steps back. Because you have to be willing to concede. You have to be willing to move back from your position. So long as you're standing in the same spot, you can't say Oseh Shalom. There'll be no peace. And even in a case where you're right, and to concede, you might have to swallow your ego, and you might have to give in, even in a case where you were right and the other party is wrong. But if there's a greater goal, if the peace is greater, so therefore you concede your honor for a little while. Step back 3 steps. And then the halakha says, sometimes you have to give in, you have to turn to the left. Sometimes you have to turn to the right. Sometimes to the center. You have to be flexible. That's the point. But those people that are rigid, those people that stay, impossible to make peace with these people. And if you look at the Torah, its value that it puts on peace, shalom. Just think, the end of the Amidah, we say, Oseh Shalom Bimromav. And the last beracha in the Amidah is Sim Shalom. The last line in the Kaddish is Oseh Shalom Bimromav. The last line in the Birkat HaMazon is Oseh Shalom Bimromav. The last line in the beracha that the Kohanim bless us every day is V'yasem Lecha Shalom. So therefore, at the end of the day, peace finds itself at the end of any important beracha, ritual, ceremony that we're involved in. It always ends up with shalom. Because the rabbis tell us, without peace, without unity, without harmony, no other blessing is worth it. A person could have all the money in the world, but if they're sitting at the table, and they're sitting at a mahogany table, and all the big club chairs, and everybody's the most delicious food, but nobody's talking to each other. So what is this word? This is the beracha. Shlomo HaMelech says, better to eat dry bread and better to eat old lettuce, but with shalom, with peace and love, than to have opulence with acrimony, with machloket. Gadol HaShalom. And therefore, the Torah is coming to tell us, we must make every effort to keep the peace. Even in a case where we just explained, where it means you have to concede your position a little, it's worth it to keep the shalom. The Torah then tells us in Perasha that one of the reasons, Chas v'Shalom, why these curses that the Torah puts, this is a sad Perasha. The beginning talks about the blessings, but towards the end of the Perasha, in the middle of the Perasha, it's all God forbidden. What if you don't learn Torah? And what if you're not fulfilling the mitzvot? Then God writes, it's a scary Perasha. I wouldn't even advise you to read it in English. It's heart-wrenching. You know, on Shabbat, when they read this Perasha, in shul, they read it low. They don't even read it out loud because it's so frightening, the things that the Torah tells us. I don't want to scare anybody. I don't want to upset your day, but we're reading Parasha. One of the things, for example, the Torah tells us the Pasuk says that there's going to come a time where it's going to get so bad, Chas v'Shalom, and this happened. Ve'achaltem besar b'nechem u'b'sar b'notechem tochelu. The Pasuk writes, and you'll forgive me, I'm reading the Pasuk, you will eat the flesh of your sons, and the flesh of your daughters will you eat. This is a terrible, terrible curse. And the Gemara tells us when this happened. Gemara says at the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, there was a man called Doeg ben Yosef. Doeg ben Yosef died and left his wife an only child. And this wife, of course, she was bereft from losing her husband, and all she had now was this son, and she cherished this son, and she loved the son like no mother ever loved the son. And the Gemara says so much so that every day she would weigh her child, and however much he weighed, that's how much gold coins she would donate to the Beit HaMikdash. She had such an appreciation to God for this child. And the next day he weighs 2 more ounces, boom, 2 more coins to the Beit HaMikdash. She was a wealthy lady. But at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the Gemara says that everybody fell on bad times, including this lady. And Chas v'Shalom, on her, the Pasuk was fulfilled, that she came to such a, out of her mind, such a level of madness and hunger and pain, that this beloved child, she did the unthinkable, the unimaginable. The Pasuk says what she did, Va'achaltem besar b'nechem. But I'd like to explain this Pasuk, with your permission, in a positive light. Say, Rabbi, how could you explain this positive? There's nothing positive about this Pasuk. No, there is. And not only is it positive, but it's a prophecy that's coming true in our times. In our times, there's a great awareness in the community at large, the younger generations, to a lot of mitzvot that maybe their parents and grandparents were not privileged to learn when they were young. Not that it's their fault, but it wasn't available. There wasn't the classes available. There wasn't the knowledge, the books, the resources. So we find today a very strange phenomenon where children are coming home with laws that their parents might never heard of. It's quite possible that a son will tell his mother that this meat over here, we can't eat anymore. It's not glad, it's not Bet Yosef, whatever it is. And now the mother has to go out and change the whole kitchen and buy the meat of her children. Or when the children go eat by the parents' house, now they have to change the whole thing because the children have a higher standard. And therefore, what's coming out is exactly what the Pasuk said. Va'achaltem besar b'nechem. The parents are eating the meat of the children. Which means they're following the laws of Kashrut now. Now they're forced to follow. The son says, I won't eat this type of food. So the mother has to go to a special butcher now because her son won't eat by his house. So the Torah is coming to tell us that there's going to come a generation where the parents are going to become elevated through their own children. Va'achaltem besar, not chasus from the flesh. Besar means the actual meat. The butcher is going to have to use their children's butcher in order to appease the children that are getting a little more religious and a little more observance. The Rasha, it's not the simple explanation, I agree. The Torah then says that most of these things are going to happen to us because of our attitude towards religion. The pasuk says, "V'halachti uvi'im bezot lo tishmi'uli," if you don't follow my or heed to my laws, "V'halachtim imi bekeri," and you'll behave towards me bekeri. What does keri mean? So he explains over here with casualness. So God says, you want to act casual with me? So I'll act casual to you. Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch explains, what does this casualness mean? It means that Torah and mitzvot are not going to be our priority. Worldliness is going to be our priority. But when we have a spare minute, so we'll do a mitzvah here and there when it fits into our schedule, when we have the time. But it's not going to be something that's overriding importance to us. So we're going to follow religion casually. On our terms, on our time schedule, on our understanding. It's casual. So God says, you want to treat religion casually? I'll also treat, God forbid, the Jewish people casually. Which means I'm going to tend to all the nations of the world. And all their needs I'm going to give them. And when I have time and I'm thinking about it, maybe I'll give the Jews something also. But it's not going to be that constant watching, that constant giving, that constant blessing. Casual religion breeds a casual reaction from God to His people. And specifically in our time, we cannot afford a casual relationship with God. The Rambam writes, Maimonides in his Laws, and I quote, "Mitzvat asem in haTorah," there's a positive commandment, "lizok ulharia b'hasoserot," to blow the trumpets, "al kol sarash shetavo al hasibur," anytime, God forbid, there's tragedy that befalls a community. Halakha says the rabbis and the leaders must sound the trumpets. That's a sign to get all the people to come to the synagogue. Aval im lo yizaku, but let's say the leaders and the rabbis, they have a deaf ear to the tragedies that are befalling our people. Velo yariu, and they're not going to alarm anybody. Ela yomru davar ze miminhag ha'olam ira lanu, and they come along and say, what's going on in the world is natural. It's statistics. We have a community of 80,000 people. People are going to get sick. People are going to die. Chas v'shalom. People are going to have problems. So it's not God. This is the numbers. This happens all over the place. Hare zu derech achzariyut. The Rambam says, if somebody can say such a thing, he's cruel. Hare zu derech achzariyut. And he writes, that's exactly the attitude the Torah was talking about. V'halachtem imi bekeri. That's that casual attitude that we're talking about. Where things happen in the world, and we say, well, it's an occurrence. It's happenstance. It happened by chance. It's a stroke of bad luck. When somebody does not attribute the events that happen in the world to God, the Rambam says it's a cruel attitude. Why is it cruel? So I once heard an explanation why it's cruel. Because if you could say that God put us in a jungle, and there's wild animals in the jungle, and we're at the whims of any chance or any happening that can happen, and there's no control, which means there's no one guiding anything. It's a father that put his son in a cage of wild animals, and that's it, you're rolling dice now. Whatever happens, happens. So what you're doing is you're making God cruel. And only a cruel person can see God as a cruel father. As we said last week or 2 weeks ago, it takes one to know one. A person usually will suspect others of his own shortcomings. And therefore, if a person has this cruelty, that means if he could do such a thing, so he'll say to the world, Don't worry about it. This is all chance. You mean it wasn't by God? If you tell me God did it, okay, there's somebody managing it. There's a reason. There's a purpose. Hashem knows what he's doing. It's not a mistake. But otherwise, you just tell me we're all walking in the street, God forbid, at any time, at any moment, God forbid, something could happen and it's like craps. We don't know what's going to be. This is cruelty. That you're making, Hasb Shalom, God into a mean father that he isn't. And that's why, Rabotai, when it comes to community issues, whatever it may be, when we hear of people that are sick, before we start analyzing why and what, our first response must be where it came from. It only comes from Borei Olam. There are no mistakes in the world. There's no errors where God sits. Everything is measured. Everything is being guided with accurate precision to the T, to the letter. There's no even an iota more of suffering if it's not meant. And that's the biggest zichut to get out of the problems. Because that's the opposite of having a casual attitude. When a person says, it's God, what are we going to do? I should get better, I should make the teshuvah. So you're taking it seriously. It's not like you're brushing it off. Oh yeah, what a shame, what a shame. Oh, it was the doctor, it was this fault, it was his fault. You say it was the world. That's casual. You're taking a serious subject and you're not giving it the proper... God says, oh, you're treating it casual? I'll give you more things that you could talk casually about. But when you take any event that happens, from the smallest inconvenience to the greatest, Hasb Shalom, catastrophe, unfortunately, you have many people that talked about World War II with that casualness. It was economic. It was because Hitler was brought into power and they didn't stop. All reasons trying to understand why this thing happened. Many historians wrote thousands of pages explaining why it happened without the mention of God in it. That's casual. That's taking something so scary and just saying, chance, it was a bad role. That's cruelty. That's cruelty. Just as cruel as the events that took place. But I think the end of the Kelalot, the Pasuk writes in Mem Bet, Vezacharti et Biriti Yaakov. God says, but don't worry, I'll remember the covenant that I made with your forefathers. I'm going to remember the treaty that I made with Yaakov. Vafit Biriti Yitzhak. And I'll remember the deals that I made with your forefather Yitzhak. Vafit Biriti Abraham Eskor. And I will remember also Avraham. The rabbis all ask. We're in the middle of a rebuke over here. God's lashing into the people, saying the worst items. And then in the middle of the rebuke, he says, and I'm going to remember your grandfathers, I'm going to remember Yaakov, I'm going to remember Yitzhak. This is a good thing. I once heard an explanation from the Megid Beduvna. No, this is part of the rebuke. There was a story told of two people that got caught for stealing. And they went to the courthouse. And the judge looked at the first one and said, who's your father? He said, my father's the rabbi. Father's a rabbi? Interesting. And you, who's your father? He said, my father's a thief. Oh, your father's a thief? Okay. The son of a thief, 5-year sentence. The son of a rabbi, 10-year sentence. He said, what are you talking about? My father's a rabbi, zechut. On the contrary, that's a condemnation. Your father's a rabbi, you should know better. A son of a thief, what do you expect? It's wrong, but already we could we hear it. He wasn't brought up the right way. But you're the son of Hashuv Mehen. You have to know better, therefore you have a big obligation and responsibility. God's telling the Jewish people, and I'm going to remember that who made all these sins? Not simple people. I'm going to remember that you're the son of Yaakov, and that you're the son of Yitzhak, and that you're the son of Abraham. And that's not going to serve you well. That's going to indict you. That's going to make it worse. If your forefathers were Terach and Lavan and Esav, we hear where it's coming from. It's in the genes. So therefore, this pasuk over here is exaggerating the punishment. It's not mitigating the punishment. This pasuk over here only makes things, it amplified it, it made things worse. Because I'm going to remember the stock that you came from. Because I'm going to remember your genealogy, your ancestry. Then it's only going to be worse. But one of the rabbis asked a solid question. He said, why do we mention Yaakov first? The Avot is Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. God should say, I'm going to remember Avraham, I'm going to remember Yitzhak, Yaakov. He says, no, I'm going to remember Yaakov first. And then I remember Yitzhak, and then I remember Avraham. So the Magid Meduvna, he gives a nice explanation. He says, there was one time, a fellow went to the marketplace, a boy, to buy nuts. So he brings with him his cup, and the merchant fills his cup up to the top with nuts. And he pays him. So the boy says, could I have a couple of extra more? This is a little spot, you're going to put 5 or 6 more on top. So the guy said, he takes 5 or 6 more for free, he puts it on top. So his friend was there, he saw he gave him 5 nuts for free. So he came to him with his cup and said, please, can I also have 5 free nuts? He said, no, I only gave him, because he bought a whole cup, so I added, he bought it, I'll give him the cup. But I'm not giving for free for nothing. So the Magid Meduvna says that Avraham Abinu and Yitzhak, although they're our fathers, but they're also the fathers of a lot of goyim. Avraham is the father of the Arabs, Ishmael, and Yitzhak is the father of the rest of the world, Esav. So therefore, if God would have mentioned Avraham and Yitzhak first, the goyim would say, Avraham Yitzhak, wait, you're remembering them? Why not remember Avraham Yitzhak for us? So therefore, God says, the main one that I'm remembering is Yaakov. On Yaakov, you have no claim. Yaakov's children were all Sadiqim. He had no Ishmael. So the main man that I'm remembering is Yaakov. Now once I remember Yaakov, so the bonus, the addition will remember Yitzhak and also Avraham. But when you mention it that way, now the goyim have no claim to the action. They have no claim to our ancestry. Yaakov is the main, is the ikar. The other avot come as a bonus after Yaakov. The end of the Parasha, there's the laws of Erchin. What is Erchin? This is a man or a lady that make a vow. They vow to pay the Beit HaMikdash their value. Every person has a value. It's called Erech. In this one paragraph in the Torah, there's a whole Gemara called Masechet Erchin that discusses it. But the Torah gives us numbers. If you're between this age, and you donate your value, it'll cost you 50 shekel. If you're this age, it'll cost you 60 shekel. It'll cost you 15 shekel. The Torah gives the ages, male or female, and how much it cost. It's a set price. So the Gemara in Erchin, I could share it with you, says the following, and I quote, Umay shena nekeba. When it comes to a female, dechi mizkena, when she gets older, kaima atilta, her devaluation in price is a third. Which means, when she's young, it's 30 shekel. That's how much her value is. When she gets older, so she drops to 10 shekel. So they cut her value with old age by a third. Umayshena zachar, but a male, de lo kai atilta. That a male, they cut him even more than a third. When he's young, he pays 50 shekel. When he gets old, 15 shekel. So they want to know, well, why should a man, his value, go down in price more than a lady? So you like, if you didn't like anything else in this class, this Gemara you like, ladies. The Gemara says, Amar Hezkiah. Hezkiah says, Amre Inche. It's like the people say, Saba bebeta, paha bebeta. When you have an old man in the house, it's, you have a burden in the house. Sabta bebeta, but when you have an old lady in the house, Sima bebeta, you have beracha in the house. You have work in the house. So that she explains that an older lady, she's active. She's cleaning, she's cooking, she's up, she's down, she's fixing, she's doing. But an older man, he becomes useless more than a man does, and more than a lady does. And therefore, the Gemara is telling you that a lady in the old age has more value, at least in this law, than a man. A man goes down to 15 because he's sitting batel, he has nothing to do. But a lady, she's still active. Obviously, we're talking about over here, not all men. We're talking about men that when they were young, did not dedicate themselves to Torah life. You see, when you dedicate yourself to Torah when you're young and you acquire the skills of learning, so retirement and old age becomes a very important part of a man's life. Because now he's free from work and he's able to devote his time to learning. He still has a mission, he still has a function. On the contrary, now he's able to fulfill his mission primarily. However, if a person's an amaaris and now he can't work anymore, so, and that was his whole purpose in life, to work, so then he just, chas v'shalom, he withers away. And therefore, his value becomes much lower. Hakamim tell us that in the pasuk, od yinubun b'seba, d'shenim v'ra'ananim yiyu, that scholars, those that learn, they stay fresh even in their old age. I could testify to that. I once visited the Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Berak, and may his memory be blessed, the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Shach, who was in his 90s already, was delivering a class. It was the most amazing sight to see. The room was filled with students, scholars. The rabbi was a short man. Then he stood by his lectern with his Gemara, and you couldn't get in the room. I scaled the wall of the yeshiva in order to take a peek in the window to see this unbelievable sight. And Rav Shach, in his old age, banging on the shtender, giving over the Divrei Torah from a Gemara with the same exuberance and the same strength of a young man, without any sign of weakness or decadence of strength. And the students were listening, and he excited them so much with some of the ideas he said that in the middle of the class they went crazy, and a ruckus broke out between the students, arguing and talking to each other, something I never saw before. And it got so rowdy because of the ideas that he propounded that day that he couldn't continue. And he said, okay boys, this is too much for you already, and he closed his book and he walked out. Show me anywhere else in the world where a 90-year-old man is able to inspire and motivate and deliver anything like this man was able to do. Was Rabbi Miller, alav hashalom, any different in his older 90s, in his late 90s? Still gave his shiurim, still gave his class. This is a man that they didn't wither away, these people, don't you understand? All the Gedolim, the Hafetz Chaim lived over 100. Rabbi Keduri may live in well, is over 100. When one starts a Torah career in a young age, it stays with him even when he gets older, and it gives him life. It keeps him fresh. It keeps his brain working. But unfortunately, the rest of the world that is not responsible in their learning, they get old. You see, I'm sitting on Ocean Parkway feeding the birds bread, listening to a ball game with a transistor radio, walking aimlessly down the street, having nowhere to go. And therefore the Torah is telling us that the man who's not learning when he's young, his value becomes depreciated from 50 to 15. But a lady, on the other hand, her value, although it becomes depreciated, but it stays higher. It's something to say about the great Jewish woman. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.